Yes. This paper is to present an analysis of comment letters received on exposure draft innovation of derivatives and continuation of hedge accounting. This exposure draft was intended to provide relief from discontinuing hedge accounting if the innovation of a hedging instrument meets the three criteria, as you can see in the first page of this paper. We received 76 comment letters and two more after posting this paper. The vast majority of respondents agreed with the necessity of issuing the proposal. However, a considerable majority disagreed with the scope of the proposal. They said that the first criterion, which is novation required by laws or regulations, is too restrictive, and therefore the scope should be expanded. They view that the expansion should be to include voluntary novation to a central counterparty. I think it would be more efficient to address each question to the board in this paper one by one, so I'd like the board to have discussion after my presentation on each question to the board. The first analysis starts from page 4 of this paper. And first analysis focused on whether we should proceed with the proposal. As I mentioned just before, the vast majority agreed that this proposal is necessary. However, a few respondents objected to the proposal because they basically believe that the novation to a central counterparty would not necessarily result in the derecognition of the original hedging instrument. I think that we clearly addressed this point already in the board meeting. The ISP agreed that the novation to a CCP meets the derecognition requirement of IAS 39 and IFRS 9, and therefore would result in the expiry of the original hedging instrument. Consequently, I believe that we can proceed with the proposal without further deliberation on this matter. So my first question to the board is, as you can see in the page 6, does the board agree to proceed with the proposal to provide a specific amendment to address novations?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just a sort.
So we'll discuss the scope separately.
Yes, but our view, you know, the answer to certain questions, to some extent, will have some an impact on the answer to the first question. And shall we start?
What do you want to write?
You know, the second question, the proposal is to expand the scope, but not include the last one. That is the last proposal, the indirect ones, but the last one is not agreed to include. But my key question is so-called indirect. No, I can accept. But the question is, now let's assume originally A, B form counterparties, now insert CCP. And indirect, you said, let's assume insert D in between. But my question is, those indirect relationship, whether, you know, let's assume, you know, A is original, the A party, and D is the third party, you know, a bank or a merchant banks. And the next step is central clearing house. Whether there should equivalent amount linkage, the contractual relationship or not? If the answer is yes, then I agree to exclude the last one. If the answer is not so clear, then it seems to answer whether we should include the last one seems, you know, unanswered question. We are not able to answer. Understand my question?
Maybe, yeah, I think I do. Well, I'm sure we're going to come back in some detail to indirect clearing relationships. I feel it in my bones. So maybe.
But quite important, you know.
It will be. We're going to go through it thoroughly. But I think the first question is just saying, do you think we need to make a change? Do we need to add some words into IAS 39 and IFRS 9 or not?
Yes.
That's all the first question is really saying. Do we need to? Are we okay just leaving IAS 39 as it is, or do we need to do something? The staff are recommending we need to do something, and then the rest of the discussion will be what shall we do?
Yeah, so I suggest when he
Okay. Introduces the following questions.
Okay.
That's right. Because I think you think we need to make a change, don't you?
Yeah.
Wegwa?
Well, he said it depends on the...
Yes, as I said, it depends on the answer to the second question.
So we wait for his final opinion. The rest of the board seems to be in agreement that we need to change. Yes?
Let me move on to the next two questions. So we need to think about whether we should maintain the criterion of innovation required by laws or regulations. And as I said, most respondents disagree with this criterion and request to expand the scope to voluntary innovation. And I think that accommodating voluntary innovation in our amendments does not contradict the purpose of this proposal, because we can still reflect the objective of the new laws or regulations, which is to mandate clearing of derivatives through a CCP. That is, if we can limit the scope to the innovation that is made with or with an involvement of the CCP, I think that that achieves the purpose of this proposal. I also find that concerns from respondents understandable. For example, they say that it is operationally easy to novate all derivatives, even if some of the derivatives are not required to be cleared through a CCP. And next issue is, should we allow counterparties other than a CCP? In the exposure draft, we stated that only a CCP should be a new counterparty as a result of novation. However, respondents pointed out that the wording does not reflect the fact that a CCP has a contractual relationship only with its clearing members. So entities which are not a clearing member of a CCP has to novate its derivatives through a clearing member of the CCP. I don't think that it does. It was our intention to exclude such innovation from our amendments, and therefore I believe we should reword our criterion to accommodate innovation to a clearing member of the CCP as well. And what we need to consider further is innovation under a so-called indirect clearing scheme. And we need to understand what the indirect clearing scheme means. Basically, the indirect clearing scheme means that a client of a clearing member of a CCP provides a clearing service to its client, just as a clearing member of a CCP provides a clearing service to its client. I think that novation under this indirect clearing arrangement should also be accommodated in this amendment, because the indirect clearing is an intermediate step to accessing a CCP. So it is essentially not different from a novation to a CCP or a novation to a clearing member of a CCP. I learned that this mechanism is not uncommon in one jurisdiction, and some entities use this mechanism as to access third country CCPs. And similarly, if there is an intra-group novation to clear through a CCP, I think such innovation should also be scoped into the amendment. However, if there is an innovation to a counterparty that does not involve a CCP, I don't think we can accommodate such innovation in our amendments, because such innovation does not meet the objective of this narrow scope amendment. We also received some comments on the third criteria in the exposure draft, which describes acceptable changes to the terms of innovative derivative. Most of the comments on this criterion is that it needs to be reworded to clarify the meaning. So I drafted the wording, as you can see, in page 16 of this paper. So my second question is to the board, is in page 16 of this paper. So does the ISB agree that the criterion 1 should be removed, and therefore the scope of the amendment be expanded to voluntary innovation to the CCP? And the scope of the amendment should include novation to a party as part of indirect clearing to a CCP. And criterion 3 should be maintained with rewording as set out in paragraph 65.
Just before I open it up, maybe if I could just give a little bit more context about the clearing members and the indirect clearing, just to give you a bit more colour and context. So only certain entities can actually directly transact with the central clearing parties in a lot of jurisdictions. You actually have to be a clearing member. And so only, for example, in Europe, from what I understand, a number of big banks are clearing members who could novate directly to the central clearing parties. If you're not one of those entities who is a central clearing member, then you need to deal with a clearing member who then on your behalf deals and transacts with the central clearing party. And using Europe again as an example, just because we've looked at it in some detail the last few days, arrangements are put in place so that the collateral arrangements with the clearing member for the client are passed on directly to the central clearing party, funds are segregated, so that in a bankruptcy, for example, of the clearing member, the party dealing with the clearing member isn't affected by the bankruptcy of the clearing member, rather it's as if they'd transacted directly with the central clearing party. And in Europe they go an extra step, and actually in some cases clients of parties will transact with somebody who then, there's a chain of four effectively, but again there's segregation all the way through, passing of collateral all the way through, protect parties so that the effect of the overall legislative objective of sort of minimising risk in the system is maintained, even though some are dealing indirectly with the central clearing parties. And really, if we were to restrict the amendments as had been proposed in the ED so that you had to be dealing with directly the central clearing party, it would mean that this amendment will only help a few big banks because the others actually cannot deal directly with the central clearing party. So I think we just need to be mindful of that context when we discuss these indirect clearing arrangements.
Okay.
So I just have in my bones that Patrick is going to deal with that issue of yours, so I'm going to pass that. But I'll come to criteria one only. If you go back and think about the decision the board has taken and the urgency with which we went to the due process oversight committee to get a 30-day comment period, and all that stuff is in response to changes that are being made by G20. If you recollect, and which is what Vegu was touching on in his question, the board and the staff feels that any innovation would have meant discontinuation of hedging relationship and starting a new hedging relationship, and we felt that is not right because people have been forced by law. Now, by making it voluntary, just you open this to anyone, are we not therefore questioning the decision that is the interpretation of the board and the staff on the first question, that is, this is a change, discontinuation of hedging relationship and starting anew, but we will make an exception in this situation. By making it voluntary, I just feel that we are not comporting and complying with that particular philosophy that we have. We are making an exception of a wide range without any response to the legal thing. My suggestion would be that I appreciate the comments that the people made. What if I do it in response to or in anticipation? I don't know about anticipation, but in response to a legislation they do it, I can live with it. In anticipation, I don't agree. I don't know whether it will happen or not. In India, we are anticipating few things to happen in companies for the last 20 years. Nothing is happening. So I don't agree with anticipation, but in response to it, if they do it to manage their workflow, I appreciate it. I think we cannot just make it voluntary blanket. And I think that's not the spirit with which we took up this project.
Patricia?
My concerns are similar to PK's. When I read the paper and I looked at the comments and the staff's proposals, they seem perfectly reasonable and acceptable to me. If somehow they're ring-fenced for this change in paradigm as we're moving from an environment where people weren't required to do this and now are going to be required to do it. And I just don't see that ring-fencing in the language. It seems to me that if we move forward with the language we're proposing, we're in effect saying that as long as somewhere in the transaction there's a CCP, that changing the counterparty on a derivative no longer is a cessation of that derivative and the hedging relationship, as long as there's a CCP somewhere in the relationship forevermore. And I don't think that's what we intended, because there, forevermore there will be a CCP somewhere in the relationship, because that's what the legislation, the point of the legislation in most jurisdictions was. So I'm a little concerned about the open-ended nature of the staff's proposed changes, although I'm sympathetic to the reasons for them and the direction they're going in.
I totally support your comments.
We go?
So from beginning, I don't like such kind of proposal. It's because, you know, we face so many contractual changes in contractual relationship as a result of different kind of changes in laws, regulations. And I don't remember how many times we discuss issues because of that. And as a developing nation, I think Brazil is the same. You know, China, you know, used central credit, CCP, you know, for the futures exchange and the, you know, cash transactions for many more than 10 years. And no one asked these questions. As a result of such kind of changes, the contractual relationship changes, what the accounting consequence will be. And forget, we already decide. But my question now focuses on question two. This is why I say the question two relate to question one. And I understand what Sue just said, you know, only limit to the original scope seems ridiculous. Now, the staff proposed to expand. But my question is, you know, those indirect relationship, whether they have equivalent, you know, the innovations with the central clearing parties, transaction by transaction, amount by amount. If yes, it's still very restrictive, but increase tremendous cost because you have to do two. And I don't think so in reality they will do so. And then if that's the case, why, what's the logic we exclude the last one? You know, if there is no one by one indirect, it means you have to form two. Third, you know, the contractual relationship. Because in addition to the original one contractual relationship, insert CCP already the second, and then you have a third one, so means you have the already third contractual relationship. If they are one by one, amount by amount, so it seems still very restrictive. If not the case, then why we exclude the last one?
Which one? Sorry, I'm not
the last internal.
No. Internal, we agree. You know, we said yes. But last one is any other innovation
that doesn't involve a CCP at all.
No. Now let's assume, you know, Marty, you are CCP. I'm Merrill Lynch. I involve innovation. Let's assume 1 billion with other parties, but only have 10%, 5%, you know, additional innovation, step innovation with you. Only 10%. You know, then the, as I said, not transaction by transactions, amount by amount. And so remain, it means the only 10% have a second innovation to the, to you, but 90% not. To some extent, I would say they are innovation to other parties. Nothing to do with the central CCP. So this is my question.
And I think what we are saying is if there is a chain that links from a small corporate entity that does hedging to a financial intermediary that is the clearing member, and then that clearing member does a kind of back-to-back trade with the CCP, yes. You say, if there is such a chain, then surely we want to not just allow the clearing member, if they use hedge accounting for that, to continue it, also the primarily affected guy, which is actually the corporate entity where it all started. Because otherwise we are having only stand for clearing members, which would be quite bizarre. So that there is inevitably such a chain, because clearing works on only dealing with some clearing members, not with everybody who wants to say, well, I wanted a clear derivative as well. And then the question is, how long can that chain be? Because we then were alerted that in some jurisdictions, it cascades further that the clearing member has another financial intermediary that deals with the corporate. My question is, from the purpose of what you're trying to achieve, that you say, look, if there is a change here and people now start clearing because that is what is the safer way to play generally, and then people need to change, and depending on the jurisdiction, that means these chains can be shorter or longer, but ultimately everybody somehow moves on to a cleared kind of product, then you don't want to break hedge accounting. That was my impression what you wanted, because you say in those circumstances there's not much more useful information that comes out of discontinuing and restarting it. I can't see why that perspective is any different from the corporate entity at the end of the food chain to the top. I think that applies to everyone in between.
My question is, you know, if the indirect, what we described, you know, the innovations will have transaction by transaction, amount by amount, of course, may not do at the same time you can do as a bundle, you know. I can understand, but increase tremendous cost. If not the case, you know, Merrill Lynch involved 1 billion innovations, but have only 10%, you know, either legally allowed orders, you know, further innovation to Central Clearing House or CCP. And what's the difference from the last ones we, you know, said you should explode? To some extent.
So are you saying that all novation should be accepted? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're asking?
I don't want to give an answer.
Is that what you're asking?
No. If all novation should be accepted, this is why I say the why won't do so. Exactly what I
Yes, but I think we're not saying all novation should be accepted, because I think the context of the ED, and let's not forget it was a 30-day narrow scope ED because it was addressing a very specific narrow issue, was to focus on people who are affected by these new regulatory requirements that result in them having to novate arrangements to a central clearing party. So I think we're trying to find a way to accommodate that target audience. It doesn't detract from the fact that novating a legal contract is a big deal. Legally, it's ripping up the contract. And so for us to be saying it's okay to continue hedge accounting is quite a big thing. So I think what the staff is trying to do is to target the audience we were trying to help, because we think in that case it does provide useful information to continue hedge accounting. But I don't think we think it's appropriate to go the extra step and say now all novations are okay, because it's actually... it really gets to the heart of the whole derecognition foundations in our literature. It's going, I think, a step further than what we think is appropriate given the scope of what we were trying to target. So I think that's the answer to your question.
Can I just confirm something with Wego? Because it sounded to me like one of the concerns you had is that when a third party does a transaction with a clearing member, you were concerned that there are circumstances where the clearing member doesn't do that additional step with the clearing house. So you were concerned that some of the transactions that would be perceived to be cleared because they've gone through the clearing member are in fact not cleared transactions because they haven't gone on. And I think that's not the
case. Yes, this is not the case.
No. Okay.
It only, if a transaction is cleared, that's the only one that can be. And even if transactions, other transactions done with a clearing member, not subject to the clearing relationship, wouldn't count for this.
Yeah, I think the objective is that you need to show that there is a chain that gets to a clearing central clearing party for you to be eligible for this amendment.
You need to have received the benefits of having operated as though you were operating through a clearing house.
My major concern is not whether you are a member or not. You are any liability, you have any liability or benefit or not. Is, you know, if, you know, the there is no, you know, chance, you know, same amount, same, you know, the transaction by amount by amount. So you leave out a clear member can have a 1 billion transaction innovation, but only 10%, 5% have indirectly further to have innovation with central clearing.
But it's only the 5% that are subject to this. Yeah, not the
90% wouldn't qualify. Yeah.
And this is my question. If the answer is still clear, so it's clear.
That has just been confirmed that is the case. Martin.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with the staff recommendation. And first, when I read it, I thought this inclusion of voluntary innovation to the CCP would go too far. But And if you think there are so many forms, and with the intention by regulators was really to drive more and more of these derivative contracts to a safer heaven, and different means by some doing higher risk-weighted asset charges then for if you don't have a central counterparty, so different forms. And if you want really to help the overall goal to really make the system safer, I think, okay, the only possibility is to include all these different forms which we see to have this voluntary innovation to the CCP included in the scope, because otherwise you, it's very, very difficult to say where you start and where you stop. Yeah, and therefore, I think the scope is, it is not to any innovation, it is innovation to a central counterparty. I think that is a limitation of the scope, but then to make it more stricter, I think is very, very difficult to say then. And if we want to do that, then the other alternative is would to do nothing, because man, based on the feedback, what we heard is, okay, if it is only limited to the enforced innovation, then this, not many banks will, it will help. So I think really I agree with staff recommendation to do it. Then for all
that's pretty much what I was going to say.
Support the staff recommendation. I think to the concern that Pat and Ian expressed about is just kind of, and okay, three, expressed about it being open-ended. I think if it's focused on whether it's mandatory or voluntary, novation to introduce a CCP either directly or indirectly, that's the restriction, because it saying to introduce means that you would not get into the scope of this any time that you happen to have a CCP involved. It would be that the purpose of the novation is limited to those that are structured to introduce a CCP in. But I think we do have to, like Martin, I think we do have to go beyond the mandatory to the voluntary, because different jurisdictions are introducing the policy objective in different ways, some from a certain date, but encouraging the outstanding ones to be moved.
But Mary, even in 5 or 10 years' time?
Well, I think if we feel that there is a need to limit it in some way, then I think I would focus on transactions, you know, it's available to transactions, not novations, but to contracts that were issued and outstanding prior to, you know, pick a date, 1/1/14, for example, because that gives the world enough time to raise awareness of this issue and not enter into new transactions. But I don't think we'll just create a technical burden for somebody in a country that is late to the party with achieving this. So, if you really feel strongly, maybe put a 1/1/16 date on it and say if you haven't caught on by then, you're out of luck.
If you put 1/1/16 date, you can do up to 1/1/16, you're saying?
Yeah.
You know, what I'm saying is transactions that were issued prior to that date, because it's you don't have this issue with a transaction that had a central counterparty in the, you know, yeah, to begin with.
I don't know if it's going to be temporary, though, because based on some of the conversations we've had with people, they still, just for sort of practical reasons, need to enter into their contracts initially with a client, and then once there's clarification of certain how valuations are going to occur, et cetera, then they may subsequently novate to the central clearing party, so there may still need to be mechanically a two-step process on an ongoing basis just because of the way the mechanics work with the CCPs. So...
But I think if it's
dating might be a bit...
John Wu.
Thank you. Just the three comments. I do support Steph's conclusion, but before I get clear, the first one is indirect clearing in terms of counterpart risk is the same as the indirect clearing and just direct clearing?
I don't think it's identical. I think they do everything they can to minimize it. I think there's still some overnight risks and things like that, but they've done everything they can to make it as close to dealing with the CCP as is possible given the chains. So, but I don't think I can say to you it's identical.
Identical, but it's not significant difference between this counterparty risk, right? No?
Oops. It's not the counterparty's risk. They still have, for example, the effect of overnight exposures on changes in mark-to-market, those sorts of, based on the timing of how often collateral's adjusted, things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's as close as they can get to being direct with the CCP, but it's not completely the same.
What happens if the intermediary is Lehman Brothers?
Right. I'm saying that's what's
going on. There's still collateral arrangements and segregation, et cetera. So you're still okay to the extent that everything's been collateralized and you've done all of the adjustments. Where you'd have a Lehman exposure, I think, would be if overnight there'd been a change in the mark-to-market, those sorts of situations. It's not like, you know, you're suddenly a general creditor of Lehman.
I also don't understand why that would be a rationale to start dragging the feet. I mean, somebody who has an unclear derivative and had that and nothing changed, they could have a counterpart who is significantly more credit risk and would be perfectly okay as long as they pass the effectiveness test. So I don't understand why now you have this ambition to chase a completely different threshold that otherwise would be irrelevant for the whole show. That is a completely different criterion, so that to me is completely nonsensical in terms of being worried about that higher quality here and not about the lower quality elsewhere. It doesn't make any sense. I think you were really trying to react to a situation where essentially, be it required or by soft pressure from the regulators to economically force you to innovate and so on, allow people to not break hedge accounting when they react to change the contract in a way that is induced directly or indirectly by the regulators, so it's not their free choice, and then say, stopping and starting doesn't make more sense here. I think if that's your objective, then I don't think that this question is really relevant, whether it is completely safe or not in that sense.
Maru?
Just one more, sorry.
Oh, sorry, John, we actually weren't done yet.
Yeah, another thing is in the case of the Weigu's comment, you know, any contract, but if that reduces some kind of risk, you know, related to all these transactions, then it might be acceptable. Because I'm saying, you know, maybe, I don't know, in some jurisdictions there's no CCP or systematic mechanism to help these transactions. I don't know. I don't have idea that each you know, status of each jurisdiction, but in that case, there is no mechanism to reduce all kinds of risk by using CCP. But still, this transaction can be a kind of a reducing. That's, I guess, where was the point is not any, but just this is getting better and better.
I think, again, that's getting beyond the scope of what we're trying to do, because we're really trying to accommodate this regulatory position people are in. Sure. And it comes back to Martin's point that we don't generally, you know, want to get involved in whether or not counterparties are a good credit risk or better or worse, etc. So I think it's getting into a broader
scope. Just to be clear, we are talking about hedge accounting for hedging relationships that before and after that has happened qualify. That's all we're talking about. It's just whether the change from qualifying before and qualifying after should be a stop-start or should be ongoing. That's all that there is. It's not that it is a hedging relationship that shouldn't get hedge accounting at all and all this kind of stuff. So it's a different dimension.
Yeah, that's why I hope we can get to a conclusion. Maru.
Thanks. Well, I do agree with staff. I guess Martin expressed it clearly, the reasons why. I don't see why not voluntary. And I guess the key point here is, as Sue mentioned, is the CCP environment as the scope. So just one additional comment to that. On the paragraphs 44 to 46, my understanding is similar to what Daryl exposed and detailed to Weigu, but I don't think we are capturing this here in these three paragraphs. Because if we just leave a client of a clearing member of a CCP, so if I am a client of a clearing member of any CCP in the world, I'm in. And I don't think it's exactly. So I would just suggest a fine-tuning in the wording here for us to capture this aspect.
It is all about in which capacity that entity is acting. In the capacity as being part of the clearing chain or in a different capacity, when it doesn't matter that they're also a clearer for different purposes.
Yeah. Pat? I am not completely in favor of the staff's recommendation
to question one. I am empathetic to the direction in which you're going, but I would change the words and not say in anticipation of, as PK, Pat, and Ian have suggested, but if a regulation has been enacted, okay, in anticipation of then preparing and knowing that certain relationships are going to have to change, I have no problem with that. But just simply in anticipation of a regulation occurring, I wouldn't. And the reason I wouldn't is for the reasons actually that Martin just emphasized. Okay, novations are about discharging and of indebtedness and de-recognizing one set of legal rights and obligations for another. Okay, that's a big deal. And understanding the credit risk implications and the gains and losses or the ineffectiveness of hedging relationships is a big deal in terms of the signals that are then sent through the P&L and the balance sheet. So to permit those kinds of transactions to proceed, okay, without any recognition and coming later on to the staff's recommendation, no disclosure. Okay, you're proposing no disclosure of these arrangements. And we're talking about multi-billion, sometimes trillions of dollars of notional amounts here.
Why do you say no recognition? It is a recognition.
No, there wouldn't be. There wouldn't be, effectively, under these arrangements. You'd be allowed to novate, and you would not have to recognize that.
You would allow to continue hedge accounting, but you would reflect the fair value after you have novation with the central counterparty.
Well, you wouldn't view it as a discharge of indebtedness, and in my opinion, if you're going to substitute a counterparty, okay, in a bilateral relationship, and now an indirect clearing member, okay, you have changed significantly the economic relationships, the rights and obligations of the party. So this is a big deal. We should really limit it and narrow it to a very set, I think, of circumstances. And we'll come back to disclosure later. Hopefully, we will require some disclosure here. But coming back to Sue's observations about what these transactions in theory really mean, I think it's incredibly incumbent upon us to have very strict definitions and a very clear understanding of what we're signing off on here.
Yep.
And so if, in fact, it's not if it's just substantially the same, and in fact, you do have some exposure to Deutsche Bank as opposed to the clearing party, or Goldman Sachs as opposed to the clearing party. I think the reader of the financial statements has to understand that, know that, and what the P&L effects and the balance sheet effects are. Because if there's some residual counterparty credit risk, even if it's overnight to those entities, that's a big deal.
That just bearing in mind, though, that before you novated, you had entire exposure to those counterparties.
I don't disagree, but
if you reduce,
done with full disclosure.
And the effects will, to Martin Edelman's point, come through in the ineffectiveness measurements.
Well, I think that's subject to, okay, making sure that the substance of the collateral arrangements are truly reflected.
Yeah, but that's a fair value measurement thing, so that doesn't change because of...
But you have collateral exposure to the indirect clearing party, or do you have it to the CCP? I think economically there's a difference.
They'd have to show that in their accounting.
Yeah. That is part of how you then establish the fair value of your derivative, which even if it wasn't used for hedging, you have this derivative, now it's clear, it changes.
The key issue are these entities acting as agents or are they acting as principals? And if there's some residual principal relationship there, then I think allowing these transactions to occur, you know, without discontinuation is not a good decision.
Philippe? I think the problem is that we take the issues a bit separately from each other. Each question, each proposal makes sense on its own, taken separately. To move from mandatory to voluntary, yes. To say if it is not directly CCP, but a member of CCP, yes. But if we combine all the freedom we are adding together, isn't there a risk that in the end, a voluntary novation to someone who is very far down the line, the line of the clearing, very far away, very indirect, voluntary, would that still meet our criteria in general? So I think the issue, as Amaro said, is in the wording of paragraph 44, how, and maybe as Peter Friedhoff or Martin Clark just explained very well, that this chain can be long. How long do we accept it to be, combined with the notion of voluntary innovation? So if you voluntarily innovate to someone who is very, very much down the chain, is it still within the scope of this limited amendment? Or is it putting in danger the discipline that we have in our
the designation. We have to find a solution to ring fence the risk of having all the standard on derecognition blow up by combining voluntary and the long chain. So let's be careful.
Ian? Yes, I just want to restate really my previous concern. I'm happy with indirect and voluntary in the, what we're doing. I'm just wondering how we contain it, that it only applies because people are doing it because of regulation with the G20, because I'm...
The change in regulation.
Yeah.
Because the regulation is there forever.
Because otherwise, I agree with Steve and Patricia that, you know, we're changing our basics for all novations, really.
Ian, on that, an idea that struck me just as you were asking that question, I think we'd have to ask the staff to see if this would work, is to say you only qualify for this exemption if the purpose of the novation is to introduce directly or indirectly a CCP in a way that would satisfy the requirement in your jurisdiction for moving clearing to a CCP, because and I'm not trying to say that because you were this is not backing off on voluntary. It's just saying in your jurisdiction, the regulators have said that this is a satisfactory way of implementing policies that would give you clearing. Ask the staff to see if it's possible to do something like that.
To something like that, because, for example, in Europe, there's guidelines on how to affect the innovation.
If the staff succeeds in tightening up the language a little bit, along the lines just suggested by Mary, who can support the staff's recommendation?
I have to see the wording, but I can go with it. I have to see the wording.
15.
Okay. Next question.
Next analysis is
on a narrow escape.
Transition requirement. In the exposure draft, we permitted only application, but did not propose any other transition relief. This means that the amendments were proposed to be applied retrospectively. A few respondents suggested that prospective application also be permitted so that novations entered into prior to the finalization of the amendment can be exempt from the application of amendments. I think we need to remind that the proposal itself is intended to provide relief from the current hedge accounting, and therefore retrospective application with permission of early application gives the greatest possible relief. I believe that the concern from respondents is about the accounting that actually occurred and reported in past financial statements. However, the past accounting is unaffected by the decision made about whether the amendments are retrospective or prospective. Consequently, I recommend that the transition requirements remain the same as in the exposure draft. So you can see the third question in page 18. So do you agree with the transition requirement as proposed in the exposure draft?
Yes. All agree?
No.
Yeah.
I'm making comments.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. I agree with the staff's recommendation, but just for clarification, I have a concern. Why people have some concern about past accounting? Because there are some area which is not very clear. So my question is simple. If novation is part of entity's documented hedging strategy, so is novation still expiration or termination? I mean, in the case of rollover or replacement, as long as it is documented, it is not the termination or expiration. So then, is it the same to the novation or not? So because I think this area, there might have been a divergence in practice. So some people thought that the replacement or rollover is more significant issue than the novation. That's why they thought, in the case of novation, if they have a document, then it is automatically continuation. But
Isn't the key question whether or not they've recognized the ineffectiveness in the change in the relationship, the ineffectiveness in the hedging relationship as a result of the change in the counterparties? Isn't that the key issue here?
I think that
that is not clear in the current
document. That's because that wasn't exposed for comment. It hasn't been discussed by the board. All we've clarified is to make clear that going forward, if you meet these circumstances, then you are able to continue hedge accounting. We can't go back and change what IFRS said previously.
Yeah.
And you'll see that we've made an observation in the paper that you'd need to ask yourself whether you think that it is part of a, you know, a dynamic hedging strategy to document the ability to novate if there are unforeseen changes in legislation.
Yeah.
But we haven't put that out for comment or opined on that. So. So I think the only thing I'd say is we're not changing what IFRS said in the past. All we can do now is clarify the effect of novations in these circumstances going forward.
Right. So in this, may I understand in this way, you're not going to talk about this in this paper at all. You keep silent. But all you said, the purpose of this paper is not to hunt such a transaction. So therefore, we just keep silent and put that it does not affect the past transaction.
All we're doing is clarifying or changing IFRS for the future. We haven't made changes to what IFRS said in the past.
Okay.
I think, Sue, you made a point which I just want to understand. So if I have introduced a CCP 2 years back, what will happen to this transaction? Can you explain in plain English for me?
Nothing will happen. Well, what will happen to that transaction as a result of these changes is that in your financial
statement... And I have booked it as a discontinuation of old relationship and a new relationship because I have an auditor who was very particular that this is how it should be done. So tell me what I should do now.
Then you would...
You just go with your new hedging relationship because you in the past actually discontinued the first one that is gone. You can't reinstate that one. This one is for the people who continue, so the other thing, and they then... can keep that hedge accounting alive.
I agree with you, but I don't think the wordings that you have get me there.
It's a natural flow from, because you didn't account for that former relationship.
Somewhere in the pages of conclusion, you should be very clear about that, because I don't think you can get that. When I read this, I felt, I can go back in the light of this discussion, go back and do it. But in the light of the amendments that Mary Tokar proposed, In response to mine, Patricia, did you have an objection to? No, it wasn't you. So in the light of that thing, how does it work? Because it's no more voluntary, really. It is in response to a regulatory regime, and the regime happened in 2012, and the transaction which a CCP was introduced in 2011, in an example. How do you do this? I think in the light of the modification which we agreed for the question one, first part, we need to think carefully how to do this.
Well, if your purpose was to introduce a CCP to meet regulatory needs, which I think was Mary's words, then you would be able to continue.
But regulatory needs happened in 2012. Regulatory needs never came in 2011 in my example.
So, and so to be clear, what I was trying to get to with that is that the in terms of how far can the chain extend and still qualify, it's that it would the change satisfy the requirements in your jurisdiction for moving to a CCP? It wasn't that it was in response to. I think the in response to is question one or two. This is just the question of how remote can the connection be? And you know that was.
Well, this is for the indirect.
This is right. This is for the indirect.
I think we all got fooled because I thought you're trying to help us with our objection.
I was trying to help with the how far removed can it be and what is the relationship.
I think then the first question is still on the table because Pat and Ian, at least four people, are objecting onto the voluntary Patricia. No, Philip is also, I think, no, Hans, I'm very serious about this. Philip is also, I think we need to think about it because I don't think we did this, we went to the due process oversight committee because it was 30 days, And I proposed the 30 days because it was a regulatory change. Now we are making it open, and we got to think about it. This is crazy. I don't want to just brush it off. And I think the staff agreed that we are doing it in response to regulatory change in the first position.
No, with the interim, but not with the voluntary or mandatory.
You can ask the staff what they understood. I saw their nods. I think we need to think about it. We don't even know what we were voting for.
I think I'd be happy to wait and see what words you advise. In the spirit of this is in response to...
I think we're targeting the responses to the regulatory changes.
Right? Are you going to bring those words back to a board meeting or just...
Wait, just circulate.
Draft.
I think this is a matter for drafting. If there are very serious matters arise, we can always bring it back, but I don't think that should be necessary.
And also go out to show people whether, you know, our writing is, you know, fit their current development.
Yeah, we wouldn't want this to come back to IFRIC.
Right.
Okay, having heard this conversation, this was question three, right?
Yes.
We're still dealing with. I don't think we have major disagreements here.
I think it's already supported that.
Next one is about comments on some wordings in the exposure draft. And you can see page 18 of this paper. First one is about the term novation. A few respondents mentioned that the term novation may be confusing because the meaning of novation is mostly used in a circumstance where a change in counterparty is not involved. So I think that we can rephrase the term in plainer English, which does not rely on a legal definition. So I recommend rewording it. And second one is about the phrase if and only if. We used if and only if in the exposure draft when describing the criteria, that is to say, the relief is allowed if and only if the criteria are met. Some respondents pointed out that the phrase if and only if causes conflict with current accounting practice because certain types of innovation, regardless of whether the new counterparty is a CCP or any other third party, have been accounted for as continuation of the hedging relationship. I think the argument is understandable because this narrow scope amendment is only intended to address novation to CCPs. So to reflect this objective of this amendment, it would be appropriate to use the phrase if rather than if and only if. And in response to other comments from respondents, I think that we need to provide in more detail in the basis of four conclusions. The reason why we concluded that novation to a CCP results in the derecognition of the existing hedging instrument. So the first question to the board is in page 23. Does the ISB agree with the recommendation regarding the respondent's comment on the wording, the proposed amendments?
On the first, you know, I fully agree with to not use the, you know, the legal terms and should replace by another one. Look at the proposal from you, 79. You suggest to use the word like substitution of original counterparty to the contract for a new counterparty. I feel can be further simplified, you know. And substitution of the counterparty to the contract is okay, you know. You know, substitution itself means replace old one by new one. You understand?
Pat?
Yes, I understand.
Yeah.
Pat? One, I have no problem with the emphasis that you're making on the if and only if phrase, so that doesn't concern me. But with respect to the definition of novation, the question, I guess, is whether or not it's defined the same way across all legal jurisdictions, and I appreciate that it may not be. The suggested language that you have here raises some questions in my mind because you say substitution of the original counterparty to the contract for a new counterparty. Well, what if the counterparty is the same? You simply just have a new contract. Would that be in the scope or outside the scope? Because a novation generally is, I understand it, is a discharge of indebtedness and a substitution, if you will, of one agreement for a new agreement. Now, that could be with a new entity or it could be with the same entity. And maybe we can describe it exactly that way. You know, a formal termination of rights and obligations under one agreement and institution or, you know, creation of new rights and obligations under a new agreement. Could be with the same counterparty or new counterparty. But I just think that it's important that we have a good meeting of the minds as to what we're talking about here in terms of what is going to be within or outside the scope of the exception. Because novation, I actually think, is pretty clear. But I've been maybe dealing in a jurisdiction that, you know, where that term is pretty widely used, but other jurisdictions I appreciate may not use it. So
you're describing a situation where you're already transacting with a clearing member of a central counterparty, but you change the contract to reduce the central counterparty within that chain.
Could be the same counterparty, right? But now I've just created new rights and obligations.
Well, yeah. We've already got restrictions, I think, that you can't change terms other than, you know, there's things necessary to deal with a central clearing party, so collateral, et cetera. So, but I think I understand where you're coming from. So not allowing that wording to be used sort of more broadly where you start changing other things.
Right. I think we need to be careful is if somebody had an uncollateralized normal OTC derivative with Bank A, Bank A is also a clearing member.
Exactly.
And then in that situation, novating that to be cleared could mean you do the other derivative replaces it also with Bank A, but now in Bank A's capacity as a clearing member. And obviously we don't want that they stumble literally reading it over. It's the same counterparty, but wearing now the different hat of acting as a clearing member means still tough luck. You have to discontinue it, Tony.
Okay, agreed. Yes, question five.
So the next one is about the equivalent amendment to IFRS 9. And we did not receive any comment that opposes the equivalent amendment in IFRS 9. So I recommend that the same relief should be provided to IFRS 9. Does the ISB agree with this recommendation?
It seems to be logical.
And the next one is about disclosure requirement. Although a few respondents suggested that additional disclosure are necessary, the vast majority agreed with the proposal not to require additional disclosures. So I recommend that the ISB maintain the decision as proposed in the exposure draft. Does the ISB agree with that?
I agree. Disagree.
So we want a formal vote to make our principles very clear? Let's vote.
Let's vote.
I'll join Pat.
13-2. Okay, thank you.